Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I am marvelous, Jim. Cold, it's marvelous.
Yeah, well, That's okay. You know, you deserve to have a little bit of a downtime and not have all that wonderful, beautiful, warm temperature. We're cold here as well, along with a lot of the country, unfortunately. But
yeah.
welcome to Straight Talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 59. Well, we've got an interesting topic tonight. Han and I, Han's very passionate about this one because we... Really, tonight's show is the do's and don'ts during construction. And it's not to scare the heck out of you, but in a way it is. And everything we're going to talk about tonight is real world experiences and examples. It's things that have happened over the, plus 35 years that each one of us has been doing this. And we do that for a reason. We do that so that you can learn, that you can be prepared and be ready, because construction, it's complicated. It's confusing. It's a process that some of you may never have ever done before. It's a process that will... I like to put it in such a way that it will test your limits. It'll test your limits of patience. It'll test your limits of civility. It'll test all of your limits. It's just a difficult situation, and knowledge is the best way to combat that, because really we all want the same result. We want you to have the very best possible solution and a very good feeling at the end of this thing that you got what you have paid for and you were well taken care of. So tonight we're going to discuss all of those interesting things, the do's and don'ts during construction. So Han, I'll let you we'll just go dive into it. We got an hour here to go through as many of these as we can.
All right, this is going to be fun. I'm going to add a little bit to Jim's statement just seconds ago. When you say experience, you heard that phrase that experience is the best teacher. I like to expand that a little bit. Is that other people experience is the best teacher. If you have never been on a construction site involved in a a building project, whether adding a garage to your home, building a new home, or building your startup for the first time and stuff like that, there's nothing wrong with being naive or ignorant on this topic. Okay. That's why you hire the best professional that you can afford, the best professional that you can find, the best qualified and experienced professional to help you walk on this journey, so that you don't come out as a drug addict or an alcoholic. Okay, so it's because it could be daunting. It's exciting. It's fun. For the most part, it just depends on how you handle things and stuff like that. This is a topic, yes, I am pretty passionate about it, because a lot of time when we do projects, both Jim and myself are very involved in problem solving. a lot of coordination and things like that. We are the people, you know, at the forefront of the project when there's technical issues, when there's design questions and things like that. The whole topic, like Jim said, it's not to scare you, but it is. Because without fear, you can end up doing really stupid things and hurt yourself and hurt your project financially as well as schedule-wise. I say this in tongue-in-cheek, and Jim laughed a little bit, but this is one of our objectives is to protect you from you. Because what you don't know, and you go out into the field and you say things, give instructions and make decisions without having your team, you know, have your back, you could put the project into a tailspin. Okay, so here's a few of the topic of the do's and don'ts that I'd like to dive into. Okay, so one of them is, and we see this quite often, especially because the project that's being built, a new office is being built for you, is more likely within your reach, within, you know, perhaps less than an hour drive, sometimes a lot of time a lot closer. So the tendency to be there on a daily basis is pretty great. Is it necessary? And you hear this all the time from your colleagues who have been through the process and things like that, is that you need to be there daily, every day. Our sentiment is not the same, okay? You do not need to be there on a daily basis. The worst thing that we find that could of a scenario on a project is that the building owner is the go-to guy or gal. Think about this. If you don't know the technical and of how the building components are put together, if you're not familiar with code issues and things like that, your decisions and instructions and or you're being swayed by the construction team of what you should have versus what they can give you, could be very financially disadvantaged to you. And so we never encourage the owner of the project to be the person they go to. You're the dentist. If you create the scenario and the understanding of the president that every question that the contractor have, they go to you, or every question that the construction team or the project team, that would include the zone, the code people, the subcontractor, and all that. If they go to you, just imagine if there's only three or four questions a day, every day. Most of the time, there's not that many questions, but just in the course of a day, four people call you or knock on your door because you're so close, and they ask you questions that take you away, that disrupt your practice. They're at the front desk, and they ask you questions, and you have to stop whatever you're doing, pull back from the mouth and come out and answer their questions. You may not know most of the time. The next things you do is you make a phone call to the people they should go to. So on a project, that would be the architect. On the project, we often encourage and educate our clients that as the architects on the project, we are your go-to guy. With a bad guy, with a good guy, with the go-to guy. So that way it allows everything to be coordinated, resolved, and all of that with your construction team without you being interrupted. Allow you to do what you do, dentistry. Allow us to be on top and in the in the loop on everything because we need to know. We want to know. We should know. Okay, so mainly the things we don't want you to be is the go-to person that everybody tagged to get their answers. And Jim?
Right. Well, it's in the doctor's best interest for us to be that entity, to be that go-to person, because I like to put it in a positive sense. What you need to do is every time a question, you can go to the site every day if you want. That's fine. But if a question arises and is given to you, your automatic response needs to be address that to the architect, no matter what it is. Because remember, go back to all our other podcast episodes. We're the quarterback. We're the leader of the team getting the job done. Okay. Everything has to go through us, or you'll never get anything accomplished properly. And the analogy is perfect because we were there from the beginning when decisions were being made as to why you decided to do this or why you decided to do that. Why is that space over there and why is it configured that way? Okay. The drawings say exactly what to build, but if the builder or a contractor or a code official or an inspector comes in and says, well, why can't you do it this way? Or I want you to change it this way. Right. That knowledge of why it was done originally this way is what we have and our team, the design team, has. And so you can't make decisions. You shouldn't make decisions in a vacuum. By doing
that, Jim, go ahead, Jim.
No, I said, but by doing that, you risk major complications. So without a doubt, I mean, resist if you can, but you know, a lot of us can't. I know I couldn't. I couldn't resist if I had a project and I was the owner of it. I couldn't resist being out there. I'd want to be out there 24 hours a day, but of course I wouldn't get anything done on my normal job. But, you know, at least in Han, you're the same way. We're both that way. We want to make sure it's done right. You know, and in our mind, the only way to do it right is to do it ourselves sometimes.
Yes.
And
it's a curse.
Yeah, it is actually, it is a curse, but trust your design team, especially if you have quality people that know what they're doing and have done this before. Now, if you don't have quality people, that's a different issue. And we'll go back to one of our podcasts about that, and maybe we'll talk about that in one of our next shows. But you were saying you had a comment there?
Yeah, I think, first of all, before we put any line on, you know, on the drawing, any design ideas on the drawing, you know, that is conveyed to you, the owner, because after all, we're designing the building for you, not for us, because you have to live there. You're going to use it. We're trying to get the best for your money, the best idea based on the way you use your building. So all of that, all of those collaborative efforts are transferred onto the drawing and to be built. So a member of the project, if they come onto the scene and not aware of how things arrive and how decisions have been made, they could sway you and muddy up the water pretty quickly. Okay, some of the prime example would be, why do they specify, carpet tile? And they go, you know, historically we find that we only use Broadloom and it costs you a lot less. Well, the things that you hear is it costs less, and your decision may be in favor of changing to a Broadloom, but what you instead of calling your design team, your architect, and say, hey, this was brought up to me on the project site. What's your thought? And my first knee jerk reaction is they should have called us and brought that question up to us for discussion, and then we can present it to you as an option if money is tight and so on. But so we could convey the benefit of using one particular material or building system versus the other, because after all, we look at the long term, we look at the performance, we do look at the cost, and there's a lot of things that have been taken into consideration before they become an idea that I put on paper for construction. So, it's very crucial that your default response is, convey this idea or convey this thought with the architect, and let's see where they go.
Right. Jim? Here's a prime example. Contractor decides that they want to tell the owner that they can move the electrical supply as it comes into the building. Now, electrical supply is the very expensive, very large electrical wiring that comes from outside in the underground a lot of times, utility that runs into the building. It runs into a certain spot within the building. Then it comes into the building, then runs into the breaker boxes, into the main breakers. That these are very big and expensive pieces of equipment. And then all the other electrical wires run to that location with all the little breakers in them. Okay. Now, there is a science around where you should put those and why you should put them. A lot of factors go into the decision-making process. One, you want to minimize the distance of that wire from the street to where it enters the building. That's a very expensive per foot set of cable and conduit. Then two, you want to make sure that it's in the right location within the building so that you can minimize the distance from a light fixture from this particular place or that particular place, from your sterilization equipment, all those things that need electricity, wires have to be run back to this breaker box. And then there's all the code ramifications of where it can be located, what it can or cannot be around, all that kind of good stuff. And then the other, most of the time, unforeseen is future. Meaning, do you place it in such a way that it does not affect the future expansion of your building? Now, that's a lot of times not on a drawing. It's definitely not on a working drawing that the building permit folks have and that the builder is building around. So they're looking at it from this little tunnel vision of, well, hey, if we moved it 5 feet over here, or if we moved it upstairs, or we move it over in this location, we can save you X. Or it would be easier for us to build, and that saves us time, or whatever the excuse might be. But if you make this decision in a void without knowing all of the things that we just talked about, plus the idea of the future, if you place that where it's going to be and it affects your ability to build an addition in the future, you might as well kiss that addition goodbye, because no one has the pocketbook to move a main electrical supply into your building so that you can put on an addition of 5 or 6 operatories down the road. That addition will cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars more than it should. And that's the kind of dollars that you might run into. It might cost $100,000 to relocate that underground utility, that electrical service box, all the things that are necessary. So the do's and the don'ts, do not make decisions in the field without the design team, and do address all of those questions that come to the architect. And then we'll say, okay, let's talk with the engineer. We talk with the engineers. They say, here are the parameters. We'll say, okay, doc, here are the parameters. Yes, it can be done. But by the way, you have to give up your idea of adding operatories in this particular example. You have to give up your idea of adding to that side of the building if you place it there. Now, if you're okay with that, then that's fine. You could save whatever the dollars might be. But if you're not okay with that, then it's a decision that you shouldn't make. And that's a real life example that has massive consequences to the future of your practice. Not today, but tomorrow. And, you know, how would you feel down the road when, you know, you're 5 or 10 years into your practice and you're going, man, I am just too small here. I need to add 10 more operatories or 5 more operatories. And, oh, yeah, I remember the architect. They said we were going to add over here on this side of the building. Can't do it.
And the consequences could be catastrophic. Let me give another example. The question that we often, you know, we get a lot of this question because contractor often see things they have vision, tunnel vision, because they're looking at a set of drawing that has very specific information that pertain to the scope of their contract to build. They may or may not have privy to future plan because they don't need it. Okay, the way the building is designed with things in place, with the infrastructure, utilities, and all that to either accommodate the building as its maximum size it will be, or the building as it's going to expand in the future. So that is part of the planning that that the contractor may or may not be privy to. Okay, so they built around what they see. But the question that we often get is, why can't I do this? Every time that if I get a nickel for every time I heard that question, I could have retired 20 years ago, okay? The reason here is an example. The building is designed to have a flat roof structure. There is truly no flat roof, okay, for the record. A lot of municipalities require that you provide what we call a mechanical screen to cover or surround the rooftop equipment if that's where it's at, so it doesn't look so ugly. Okay, it's an aesthetic thing, and it's usually governed by the zoning board. And so, if a contractor bid a job, drawings show what it is that he or she is bidding to do. So once they sign the contract and say, I can build this building for you for X dollar, that is the understanding. But the exercise of trying to value engineer the project continued from that moment to the end of the project. The contractor would do everything that they possibly can to substitute, to change, and all that stuff. You should have a bottle, a hunk of cheese for when you go out to the project because you hear a lot of whining out there. So this particular project has a flat roof construction, design, rooftop equipment, and a design element was put in, was designed into the project to, one, screen the mechanical equipment, two, to give the building a design feature that would complement the design. And the contractor convinced the owner that it would save the owner if we increased the height of the parapet wall, which is the perimeter wall around the around the building. We increased the height of that high enough so that it could serve, it will hide the equipment, and they can omit the mechanical screen because it will save them money. Well, there's physics equation. For every action, there's a reaction. Okay, it applies to building constructions and stuff like that. When you increase the height of the parapet wall, you are building something that's taller, bigger, therefore it costs you to do that. Okay? From a design standpoint, it's a trade-off that we have to weigh because it changed the aesthetic of the building, the design of the building. But there is the consequences is this. If you happen to locate in a state where it rains a lot, heavy downpour and rain, or snowfall. So when you have a heavy snowfall, the higher the roof, the more snow accumulation on your building. So if the building is not designed to have heavy snow load on it, and you increase the height of the parapet, basically you trap the amount of snow. Snow basically when it melts, it becomes water. Water is heavy. So it stresses out your building, and it creates other unplanned issues because somebody convinced the owner that it doesn't cost them anything more. It would save them money if they do this versus that. If they don't understand building design and the physics of things that apply and that stress the building, they're going to mess up your building for you. It's a long-term, long-term consequences of simple decision to save a few dollars. Even before that discussion takes place, it should be brought up to the architect, and not so that the architect can educate the team and look at the ramification of going that route. So it's important that you have your team, your design team, to be at the forefront to offset some of the challenges that could be imposed based on the contractor's desire to save the money and spend that money someplace else. Jim?
Yep, without a doubt. Well, I'm going to add a little bit to what you started off in the first part of this discussion, and it had to do with visitation to the site. So we're going to jump ship a little bit and talk a little bit about that. I'm going to give you some do's. Do wear a hard hat while you're on the construction site. And you may say, that's silly. No, it's not. You know, one of the most important organs that you have is your brain. And in the construction site is one of the most dangerous areas that you can be in at any given time. And people just really don't understand how dangerous a construction site is. Workers get injured or killed all the time. That's why OSHA is around. And all those bureaucracies that are out there to try to protect and make it safer. But still, people get hurt. How devastating would it be for you to be injured? And, a brick or something from above, because people are working and they accidentally drop things. And if you happen to be in that particular location, it doesn't take much. And you can be really, really injured very easily. So always, and I mean always, wear a hard hat on the site. It may look funny, it may look silly, but I'd much rather have my noggin intact than worry about, how I look. Number two, always, do wear heavy boots or footwear of some sort. Again, construction sites are, again, extremely dangerous. do not walk out on that construction site in your leather loafers that you wear at the office. You step on a nail, something falls and crushes your foot. These are not, oh, that never happens kind of scenarios. This stuff happens all the time. And it can be devastating. People are crushed. People are toes are run over by construction equipment. People just aren't looking. And remember, you're not a seasoned construction worker who is looking out for, one, what they have to do, but also looking out for the dangerous points or spaces or areas. So you have to keep your head on a swivel. You have to look around with what you're doing, but you have to wear the proper kind of attire when you're out there. Now, that's just you. This is a big do. Leave your kids at home. Do not, and I repeat, do not, and I'm lecturing, and yes, I am lecturing, do not let them on the construction site. We all know that, you know, you'd love to show it off, and you love to show your kids what you're going to be doing. But it is just so extremely dangerous. You know, maybe an older teenager, but even that, I don't like to even say that that's a good thing to do. A lot of good contractors will mandate in their contract with you that you, your family, and your children are not allowed on the construction site at any time. And that only you are allowed on the construction site during specific times for meetings and while accompanied by the contractor. And that's the only time, because they are so dangerous. I'll give you a real world example. Had a situation where a family was walking through a building. They had their three kids with them. Younger children, and they were in their 5 and 6 year old range. And one of the children decided to walk over. Mom and dad were talking, showing something to someone else in a particular situation. And the third child walked right into where a stairway was supposed to be placed. It hadn't been installed at this time. It did have a fence around it, but it was not a complete fence, and the child walked right through into the opening, fell down to the basement, sustained a head injury, was knocked unconscious. Thankfully, the moral of that story is that the child recovered. Could have been the other way around. Could have been disastrous. The child missed some rebar that was sticking up by about 3 inches. If that child had been 2 or 3 inches to the other direction, they would have lost a child that day. So that's how dangerous construction sites are. So do absolutely leave your children at home. I mean, if it was mine, I would leave my wife at home. Or if it's the wife's practice, I leave my husband at home. You don't need to risk it. It's too dangerous, especially during the early parts of construction when there's a lot of open holes, there's a lot of open areas. I mean, it gets less dangerous when you're starting into the interior and the finishes and that kind of stuff. But during that early part, extremely dangerous for everybody. Han?
Yep. Jim, who would be responsible for the safety on the site? The owner?
General contractor is responsible for the safety of the construction site because it's his construction site. But by contract, there would be a liability insurance policy that the owner and the contractor take out for any injuries that happen on the site. Specifically, something like, let's say you have a construction site, it's fenced, and some neighborhood kids decide to jump the fence and go play in the construction site, and somebody gets hurt. You know, who's responsible? Well, the owner and the contractor, specifically the contractor first, but the owner second. You'll all get pulled into a lawsuit by mommy and daddy of the child who decided to jump the fence, even though he was trespassing or she was trespassing. Doesn't matter. And they'll file claims against your insurance policy. So it's another due. Make sure you have a liability construction policy in place for that particular event.
A couple of items, Jim. From a safety aspect, yes, it is inconvenient to put on the hard hat, and that'll mess up your hair. You don't look studly anymore after you're done. But like Jim said, it will save your brain. Okay. A safety glass. When you come onto the project site, you should have safety glasses on. Okay. No, Jim is not exact reading anything here. Things happen in a split second, and your life would change drastically. You could be out on a project site, you know, great day, great weather and all that stuff. They're doing roofing, and a gust of wind pick off a sheet of plywood off the roof and throw it on the ground. You just happen to be in the past. All right? They say stuff happens. So when you're on a project site as the owner, if you have hired a contractor, your architect will express the safety concern and the safety requirement and the responsibility of making sure that the project site is kept in a safe condition for everyone, and that responsibility really truly lay on the shoulder of your GC. So if you're out there working or visiting the site or just drive by the site and look at it and you see that the crew doesn't have the shirt on because it's hot and they're doing roofing, they're in shorts, sneakers, no hard hat, no goggles and stuff like that, be brave enough, be responsible enough for yourself and confront the contractor and make sure that he implement the safety measure on the project, because if they don't, somebody get hurt, you will be dragged into that. All right. One other thing that I do not see happen a lot on project site that I think if you are embarking on a project, you should implement this particular requirement, is that everybody sign in. Okay, have your GC be responsible for every soul that walk onto the project site. They sign in, identify who they are, who they're with, who they are to see, and what for. Because both Jim and I came from a background where we do projects that are in the $100 million plus capacity, so you have a small army of people on the project site. If the environment is hazardous, something happened, and you don't know who's on the project, who's on the site, and they're not accounted for, that would be a tragic thing. So make sure that the contractor implement a check and balance process so that everybody's documented. So often that I hear contractors say, so-and-so say I could do this. And we say, well, who is so-and-so with so-and-so of so-and-so? What is the documentation and what is their role and what did they say specifically? Because there's no track record of that individual being there. So there's nothing it's hard to check and confirm. So it's a check and balance process that I think is very worthwhile to have as part of your project. It's also a part of the safety mechanism for your project. Jim?
Well, I'll add a little bit to that, and unfortunately, it's in this day and age that we live in too, and it has to do with everything from terrorism to drug trafficking and all that other nasty stuff that we unfortunately live with. if you don't have a contractor who keeps records of who comes and goes on your project, depending on where it's at and what happens, you could find yourself drawn into a legal situation and or a criminal situation if something to that effect is happening or happens on your property while it's under construction. So you have to keep those records and they have to keep those records and have those readily available, one, secure, but also readily available, so that at any given time, if something happens, I mean, we live in a day and age. It's unfortunate, but nasty, bad people do bad things. And if they have an opportunity or if they see an opportunity, they'll take it. Prime example, project, it's an older project, happens to be an existing building. It was under vacant for a bunch of years. And that particular building was improperly secured. It was being renovated. And some unfortunate, criminals utilized the place to dispose of a body, someone that they had killed. And it's terrible to talk about, but that stuff happens. And, it is unfortunate, but you need to protect yourself. So that's a do. Protect yourself with a contractor who does their work and does their paperwork and make sure that they have records of who comes and goes on the particular properties at any given time. Hon, I'll let you talk about the next one. Did I lose you, Hon?
Jim?
Yeah, go ahead. You're next.
Just a quick extension of what Jim was talking about. I've been on project sites where before I enter the facility and do my tour, the project or the plant manager shared with me that if you hear a whistle and you see employees running in a certain direction, stay in front of them. Okay? That means that there is volatile conditions that could be catastrophic. So project site is very, very dangerous, even for a simple dentist office. Okay? So the next topic. We have talked about change orders in some of our episodes, and change orders is one of those things that you try to avoid on a project. But change orders usually have financial impact when the project's under construction. Sometimes it's very rare that you do a project that that change order doesn't exist. You try to minimize it because it's it has financial impact on the project. Sometimes it's not a matter of engineering or design flaw, but it could be driven by the owner looking for to add something, subtract something, or whatever the case is. Change orders has financial impact. So if there is something that warrants a change order, we recommend before it gets implemented that the discussion should be go through with the architect, the engineer, if that applied to them. But usually when you move something, change something, it affects a good part of the team, right? Minimally the architectural. And it might affect the plumbing, may affect electrical, and so on. We get this sentiment all the time. I just move a couple walls. How big of a deal is that? Well, if you have a big room and you add a wall, you now have two rooms, okay? Mechanical equipment, lighting, and all that stuff for those two rooms are different than one single room. So it affects the architecture, it affects the mechanical, it affects the electrical, it may affect structural. If you put a sink, if a room had a sink and you divide it in two, you might have two sinks now. So it also will affect your plumbing. So again, change order. Before you say yes or you say no, the discussion should be why, what benefit, what's the impact, how long it would take to do that, and how much it will cost to do that. All of that should be understood thoroughly and agreed on before you give the okay. Now, of course, naturally, the bigger change orders usually would be communicated with the, you know, with the owner, so that the owner would know what the impact is. It should be investigated, reviewed, discussed before it gets implemented. So as the owner, if you're out on the job site talking to the contractor and the contractors say, you know, we can do this, we can do that. Do yourself the favor. What is your default answer and respond? Talk to the architect first. Right, Jim?
Exactly. Yep, without a doubt. And I want to get another one in here, which I think is crucial. We've seen it too many times, and I'm going to put it in the do category. Do follow the proper payment process when paying your contractor. Because if you don't, it can be devastating. And we've seen it. Han and I, unfortunately, you know, there are great contractors out there, and there are some that are not very. And we've got a prime example. Han's got a couple. I know I've got a couple, but. Okay, first question is going to be, what's the proper payment process? Well, here's the proper payment process.
I was going to ask you that.
What is the proper payment process? Here's the proper payment process. The contractor is responsible for giving you a application for payment for what he or she has done in the last 30 days and what he or she has stored of materials that are going to be used on your project. That paperwork is then given to the architect for us to review. We review that, make observation, double check it. We then pass that on to the lending institution as well as you for them to review and ultimately for you to give the AOK to your lending institution. We certify, because we're supposed to sign the bottom of that thing, that certify that this is proper for payment. It'll have a whole lot of technical stuff on it. It'll have how much has already been paid. It'll have how much is in a percentage done of all the particular parts. It'll have percentage stored and all the particular parts, the change orders, if there are any adjustments, all that stuff. Bottom line is, okay, you can look at this thing and say, okay, I paid this much money to date. They're asking for this much money for what they've already done the last 30 days. And then we certify it. You authorize the bank to make the payment. The payment is then made to the contractor, and then he or she is to pay his subcontractors. That's the process in a nutshell. You do anything differently, you risk the scenario of opening yourself up to a situation where anyone, contractor or mostly contractor, but potentially subcontractor, walk away with a bunch of money that they haven't earned. And you say, Does that really happen? Yes, it happens. And unfortunately, it happens a lot. Han, I'll let you give your example because I know what you want to say.
Let me see. Does it happen? If it happened once, it happened once too many times. Okay. Again, we work hard to find quality contractors. Quality contractor and honest contractor don't necessarily mean they're the same folks. Okay. Again, the process of requesting for payment, if a contractor, say, do this, I'm asking for this much, and you pay them without it being certified that they actually have earned that, then you give them money that they have not worked for. And if they have financial trouble, you will find that out really, really quickly that that your project would be in trouble. Because if they don't pay their people, their subs, you're going to have people not showing up to work. Okay.
Well, on top of that, hon, you're going to have people handing you a piece of document that says, come to court because I'm suing you for the money that you owe me.
That's right.
They put a lien on the project, and you'll pay twice. So you'll have given your money to the contractor who has left in this particular scenario, taken your money, who knows where they're at, and now you've got a subcontractor who's sitting there saying, I'm owed $100,000 for the work that I've done. And you're saying, my bank already paid the contractor $100,000. Go get it from him. Nope, doesn't work that way. He has the right to go to you to get payment. And you'll have to come up with $100,000. And that's an extra $100,000 that you didn't borrow from the bank. Where's that come from? Comes from either a larger loan or out of your pocket. Hon?
Yes, that did happen on a project. Okay. It's very unpleasant. It's very stressful. Remember now, we have a process. The protocol of flow of information, flow of approval and all that stuff. If any of that get out of kilter, it's going to affect you. In our particular case, the contractor, instead of submit the request for payment to us, to the architect on the project, they submit it to the owner. The owner go, oh, I owe them money. He signs it, pass it on to the bank. The bank go, oh, the owner approved it. And they never bother to look and say, okay, it did not went through the hand of the architect. The architect did not certify it, but the owner did. So they write the check. The contractor walked with a lot of money. The subs come after the owner and say, you owe me money. It was stressful. It was avoidable. If it goes through the proper channel, the proper review process, we can simply look at it and say, no, you asked for 50% of the contract sum, but you only done 10%. The red flag will fly. Okay, something's happening here that should be looked at, investigate, and avoid if all possible. So. It's a piece of the unpleasantry that you just cannot stress enough. It sucked when it happened to others, but boy, I tell you what, it sucked big time when it happened to you. Okay. So
yeah, it does, and I don't mean to laugh because it's not a laughing situation, but it is totally avoidable. Just have the process in place. And I guess my last point that I want to throw out here, Han, is what does this all mean you know, why are we going through this exercise? And one of the tonight's show really comes to this kind of, you know, we've got five more minutes here, this kind of conclusion. And I'm going to put it in a do category. Do keep the architect on your team during construction. And you may say, well, that's really self-serving. Not really. It's your best spent few pennies to keep your architect on the job during the construction, because we're your best advocate. How many of these things did we talk about tonight? All are avoidable if it's run through the architectural design team. Okay. Who is the advocate for you? Every one of them are avoidable. The loss of funds, having to do with revisions or changes in the project scope. You just name it over and over and over again. Keeping the architect on during construction, what's called construction administration, is crucial. And we hear it so many times where contractors say to the owner, we don't need the architect. We can save a few dollars during that time, you know, that you don't have to have them on there for the few little dollars for their fee. And, you know, we do that. You know, we make sure everything's done right and we make sure everything is done properly. It happens. And then unfortunately, it happens way too much. Now, good builders won't do that. The ones that recommend that, we tend to say, you know, be leery of, because what's the reasoning behind it? Is there reasoning that they're trying to pull something down the road? Because our little dinky percentage of our fee is pennies compared to the potential massive risk and exposure that you are open to. Like in the example we talked about, when, you know, the subcontractors came to the owner asking for $100,000 of work that they've already done. Hon?
No, yeah, Jim, you know, as we say, it's avoidable, but it happens. And here is the common denominator that I've seen why and how it happened. Okay. Yes, when Jim say it's kind of self-serving. No, it's really not. Okay. If having the architect on the job for a, you know, for a fee, depends on the scope of the project, but what if we can help you to avoid a $10, $20, $30, or $50,000 change order? Would it worth it? You betcha, Bibby. Okay?
Or a $400,000 extra payment that they should have made. That's
right.
Huge.
Now, the only time that I find where the where those factor that the architects are not on the project is that somewhere upstream of the process, some genius convinced the owner that they are the one that can help the entire process without the architect, because they can, you know, because they built the building, they've been at this for a long time, they're the good guy, they're the honest guy, and all that stuff. You don't need the architect. I couldn't tell you the number of times that when we come back to a project after the savings, supposedly, to the owner, or the architect, in this case, us, are removed from the project against our advice, is that the rate job of the project when it's done, the things that was not in the project design, that have been omitted or drastically changed, or the quality is drastically reduced because the good guys say you don't need an architect. Once the architect, your best advocate, is removed from the project, they are free to do what they please. And you have very little recourse to stand on. I mean, you look and go, okay, what can I do? He or she is 2 months behind, and I got this deadline that I need to meet. If I get rid of them, if I say anything harsh, they may walk off the job, yada, yada, yada. And we hear all the excuses. The best way to protect yourself is to have the people that watch that speak for you, that protect you, that advocate for your interests. That individual, he or she, is your architectural team. That's it.
Without a doubt. That's out of doubt. Well, hopefully this has been informative. We, you know, not too negative. We put a lot of do's in there. So everything can be done in a do fashion as just as well as a don't fashion. But, you know, there's so many more things that we could talk about. And, you know, maybe we'll have a part two of this sometime coming up. You know, thanks for spending the evening with us. Hopefully it was informative. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of information on our website. Download our construction guide, which has even more information in it, because it's an interesting, exciting time when you go to build. But also, there's a lot of do's and don'ts, and you definitely want to do all the do's, and you don't want to do any of those don'ts. So with that, thank you. And Han, you get the last word.
Well, it's not a matter of trying to scare you, but more of informing you. Well, I hope that the information we share will benefit you in some way. Again, it's an hour past. I certainly enjoy my time. I appreciate you spending the time with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.